Relatively Geeky presents Doom Speak, Dr. Doom number one. Welcome to the first episode of Doom Speak, in which we'll be observing and celebrating one of the most important days in comicsdom, the issuance by Marvel Comics of Dr. Doom number one, the first comic ever to bear that glorious title. Our plan is to cover the first three issues in this format, dedicated episodes in the feed, to be released within a few days of the comics release. As a matter of fact, you already know how miserably I have failed to achieve that. I mean, you know that I've met this goal, because I am recording this intro 4 days before that issue comes out. Hello, future people. Now, my hope, my intention, my plan, like I said, at least for these first three issues, October, November, and December, is to buy the comic on the Wednesday of release and have an episode discussing that issue out on Saturday. Like I said, you already know whether I managed that for this first time out. Now, after those first few issues, once 2020 rolls around, I'll decide if I want to keep doing these solo, separate review shows for each issue, or if I just want to roll this into the monthly comics reading journal, of course, as its own dedicated segment. And you can help me make that decision via feedback on this episode. In case I forget later, feedback can be sent via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or comments can be left on the Facebook post or the blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. But before we get to the historic document that is our reason for convening this meeting today, we're going to recap a little bit about the history of our man of the hour, at least in comics that bear his name or almost bear his name, as we'll talk about the previews and the hype for this series and what it's presenting itself to be. So we're going to start by talking about the history of comics with, like I said, similar names featuring the rightful ruler of Latveria. And it took more than 25 years of Marvel Comics, the modern age of Marvel Comics, for Victor to find his name up in lights, if you will, or as the title of a comic. Now, in terms of books including Doom or Dr. Doom in their titles, we'll start with an OGN from 1989, Doctor Strange and Dr. Doom, Triumph and Torment. Yes, he had to share billing, but this is the first time his name was part of the name of a comic, or in this case, like I said, a graphic novel. That was by Roger Stern with pencils by Mike Mignola. And if the cover is any indication, Mignola was a really good choice for this. Now, I have seen this. It is possible I own this, but I don't remember actually having read it before. But the next thing on the list I have definitely read and have podcasted about the first 15 issues of. We speak of my favorite comic title of all time from 1993, the terrific Doom 2099. To me, this is a turning point for Doom, not only making him the title character, the POV character of a series, but legitimately making him the protagonist, might I say, dare I say, the hero of the comic. Now, more generally, the biggest contributor that 2099 made, certainly in retrospect, is trying out a few big ideas and giving them a long run, but in a side universe. In business, we might call 2099 a test market, trying an idea for a product or a service on a smaller scale before deciding if it's worth the cost and the risk of doing so on a major scale, and certainly the ultimate line worked in the same way. So this was a test run to see how turning Doom away from Stan Lee's traditional 1960s take on him as nothing but an evil supervillain, moving him into the category squarely of antihero, how that would be accepted by fans, and how creators would handle that task. And since 1993, I'd argue that Doom has taken on, in progressive ways, more and more of that role. Now, even though this next title I'm going to mention doesn't have his name in it, it was a few years before, but not mentioning this would be a major oversight, and that would be the first Secret Wars, because this really raised Doom's profile within the Marvel U and may have been the first step in that turning point that then 2099 took and ran with, which have really laid the groundwork for bringing Doom to where he is currently, which is the star of his own comic book. But back to books with Doom's name on them, we jump up to 2000, another important year for the rightful ruler of Latveria. We speak here of Heroes Reborn, which had both Doom and Doomsday issues. The Doomsday issue ran right into the epic three-issue miniseries written by Chuck Dixon, simply called Doom. This was great, taking place in the world of Heroes Reborn, and showing Doom as the powerful and smart and loyal warrior that we all know him to be. Until the new series that we're discussing today, this was the closest we'd ever come to a series named after our hero, Doom. 2 years later, we got another three-issue mini with the same creative team, Doom, The Emperor Returns. Now, since then, we've had Books of Doom, Dr. Doom and the Masters of Evil, Iron Man Legacy of Doom, and of course, Victor's major leading, truly heroic role in the recent Secret Wars 3 event. And all of these books have just added to that slow reworking of Doom's character into a lead character, into a character that can hold his own title. I have to say that I thought that Dr. Doom's apex, his high point, was a few years back when he was dominating the Marvel Universe in Secret Wars and beyond, while simultaneously the FF was bombing in movie theaters and homeless in comic books. Yeah, those were good times. But with fingers crossed, maybe 2019 and 2020, this new Dr. Doom title, maybe this will be a new apex, a new high point. Now, all of that action with Doom and the FF a few years ago, that led me to a simple conclusion, a line I've used many times. And we're seeing it now in the current reboot or renumber or revolume, rejigger, whatever it is that's happening with the Fantastic Four nowadays. I mean, who really knows? I know. Who cares? But who really knows? And that's a simple fact. The Fantastic Four needs to have Dr. Doom. But Dr. Doom doesn't need the FF. Over his long and illustrious career, Dr. Doom has faced down Namor, Spidey, the Hulk. He's had some epic clashes with Iron Man. Gone toe-to-toe with Squirrel Girl. We really don't talk about that. But still, the point is that to him, the FF is one of the many things that may or may not be on his agenda. But for them, for the Failure Four, everything they do seems to include, by necessity, if not completely, revolve around Dr. Doom. This new ongoing title was announced at the San Diego Comic-Con in the middle of July. They released the covers for the first two issues at that point, and gave us this solicitation content for the first issue. I guess spoilers? Victor Von Doom, scientist, sorcerer, disfigured face, twisted soul, has been spending much of his time warning against a trillion-dollar global effort to create the first artificial black hole, wrestling with visions of an entirely different life, a better future. Dr. Doom finds himself at a crossroads. What is he questioning? A catastrophic act of terrorism kills thousands, and the prime suspect is Doom? Victor will have to push his unexplained thoughts aside and focus on remaining alive as the title of Most Wanted Man is thrust upon him, left with no homeland, no armies, no allies, indeed nothing at all. Will the reign of Dr. Doom come to an abrupt halt? Now, I want to thank the many listeners and online friends who brought this to my attention, this news, this fact-ivy new upcoming ongoing Dr. Doom series, knowing that I might be just a little interested in hearing that news, including Rob Lance of the Comic Connection store in Oakville, Ontario, who sent me a link to that solicitation from previews as soon as he saw it. Good man. Good man. Now, when I decided to do this podcast series, I tweeted out about my anticipation, gently poking at my friends Paul Hicks and Mike Garvey, who have been using the name Waiting for Doom for their Doom Patrol podcast for many, many years. My comment was that I would definitely do episodes about this new Dr. Doom title if only the best possible name, Waiting for Doom, had not already been taken. And then it was, I'm not sure, but I think it was Karen from Between the Pages who told me that I already had the best name available, that it had already been coined. She was referring to Doomspeak, which was the name bequeathed to me by Herman Lowe, co-host of the terrific horror podcast Into the Weird. One of the things that Herman does is create Bronze Age-style origin stories for listeners who leave iTunes reviews, and I was one of the early listeners to do that. And Herman delivered an excellent story in return and gave me the title, Doomspeak. Now we're going to take a break here, and instead of playing a promo for another podcast, we're going to play that Bronze Age origin by Herman Lowe. So thanks again, my friend. Excellent work. And on the other side of that, we'll talk about Dr. Doom number one.
The year is 1975. Picture, if you will, Alan Middleton, a young man fondled by the hands of fate. While joyriding on a remote mountain road in his uncle's 74 Camaro, a fateful collision with a truck careened him off the road, resulting in a fiery explosion that revealed a shocking truth. Beneath the tattered flesh caused by Alan's injuries lurked the exoskeleton of a Latverian Doombot. Realizing that his life up to this point had been a lie, the teenage construct traveled to Latveria, where he confronted his insidious maker. Taking pity on him, Doom revealed to Alan that he had been the first of a series of prototype life model infiltrator Doombots, which had developed a fatal flaw. Their high-level machine intelligence, coupled with their advanced empathic circuits, rendered them all too human, incapable of the ruthlessness and blind obedience Doom required. In a rare gesture of mercy, Doom inserted the baby bot into the American adoption system and promptly forgot about him. Twice rejected and now deported from Latveria by a creator who despised being reminded of failure, Alan set out to prove himself worthy of his father. Returning to the States and following in the footsteps of Doom, Alan was seduced by academic life and proceeded to collect PhDs like a sugar addict collects lollipops on Halloween. After taking the world of science by storm with his theory of relative geekery, a scientific marvel that made Einstein's stuff look like cheap pizza recipes, Alan, with the aid of his enhanced onboard voice modulator, perfected a science even Doom coveted. Radiotronic audio wave mind modulation, the ultimate form of mind control, a science he termed Doom casting. The Latverian monarch at last saw potential in his now wizened construct and presented Alan with a test. Procure a 25-cent pristine copy of Fantastic Four Volume 1 Number 5 from a quarter bin at a comic convention. Jumping at the chance to perform this impossible feat, Alan headed to the nearest con, dragging two captive mutants along, Longshot and Domino, whom he had abducted from the future and placed under his thrall with his mind modulator. A story for another day. In the presence of these two lucky but unlucky do-gooders, Alan quickly found a near-mint copy of said issue in the first quarter bin he perused. He reunited with his father and has been cruising the radio waves ever since, soothing humanity's resistance to tyranny with his calm, reassuring voice, gently spreading the doctrine of doom. And that, weird listeners, is the origin of Professor Alan, otherwise known as the podcasting polymath, the Latverian lector, the academic ace. Yet one name rings louder than the rest. Doomspeak.
And we're back. And I just realized that it's possible that I didn't introduce myself at the top of the show. If you found this episode just for the Doom talk and aren't familiar with the rest of Relatively Geeky, let me say hello. I'm Professor Alan, and I'm a fan of Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom number 1 has a cover date of December 2019, was released on Wednesday, October 9th, 2019, and had a cover price of $4.99. Now, before you panic at that outrageous price for a comic, which it is, let me point out that the comic in question did in fact contain 31 pages of story. We hope the future issues, if they are at that cover price, continue to be oversized. But I don't necessarily count on that. Darn you, modern comic books! The cover, by Aiko, shows a full face close-up, or full mask close-up, of our title character done in shadowy reds and greens. The green is certainly a color, long associated with Dr. Doom, but the red is not. So I assume that's about setting a tone of danger and drama. But it is a solid poster-style cover. There was an alternate cover for this title by Cliff Chang. This was a Mary Jane variant cover. There were also four retailer incentive variants. Those were by Art Adams, Simone Bianchi, and Mike Diodato, as well as a Steve Ditko hidden gem variant. And I don't know what that last one means, but if you do, feel free to let me know. The story, Pottersville, was written by Christopher Cantwell with art by Salvador La Roca. Spoilers for the events of issue 1. I'm going to go through the comic scene by scene, just so you know. Also, I do not keep up with all of the goings-on in the Marvel U, as sometimes those events do not involve the Good Doctor. So there may be some context I'm missing here, references, some backstory that's going over my head. Also, I've only read this issue once so far, and then I flip through it again to make the synopsis. The opening page gives us this text. Born to a poor nomad and an ill-fated witch, Victor Von Doom used his talent for combining sorcery and technology to take over the European country of Latveria, making him one of the most powerful people on the planet. Over the years, Doom has wielded his power for great good and great evil. I might quibble with that last part, but at least this description is balanced. So thumbs up to hashtag big comic on that one. Anyway, great good and great evil. Leaving the people of Earth with one question to ponder and fear. What will Dr. Doom do next? We start on the moon at the Atlion Control Center, which operates a space station that has been designed to remove CO2 emissions from Earth's atmosphere to combat global warming. But this is done in a way that generates waste that is 30 times as toxic as nuclear runoff. But that's okay, because the waste is moved to the control center on the dark side of the moon, which will include a perfectly controlled black hole waste depository. This black hole is minutes away from going online, and all of this info we learn from a TV news segment. And at the end of that, they invite Dr. Doom on for his comments, for an opposing view. And after ripping both Reed Richards and Tony Stark, he tells Steve, the pretty boy newshead who keeps interrupting him, that he does that, the interrupting, at his own peril. Now, Doom is opposed to the operation for a simple reason, because it will lead to a disaster of interstellar proportions. He cuts off the interview, and the AV guy in Latveria approaches Doom to remove his collar lav microphone. But Doom backhands the lackey with one of the all-time great comic sound effects. B-O-W-F-T-C-H-S-H. Bouch! Doom is informed by his aide Petra that a neighboring nation, Simkaria, is amassing forces on the border, and gives his female costumed security officer, Zora, a.k.a. Victorious, a particular task. Instead of watching the opening of the black hole on the TV, Doom and Petra, who we learn is the daughter of Doom's old and cancer-stricken mentor, Boris, they watch from outside, just looking up at the moon, and they see a flash. The black hole is operational. Later, in the privacy of his personal study, Doom is visited briefly by Kang. Kang is confused, not knowing where he is, which Dr. Doom just credits to all of the damage caused by all of the time travel Kang has done. They discuss how they are strangely time-tethered, and then as they turn to the topic of Doom's recent bouts of melancholy, Kang disappears. We then get a domestic scene of a happy family, a man named Victor in a regular business suit, two kids, a wife, Fruzilla. In this scene, Victor refers to himself as the world minister. Weeks pass, and the Simkarian situation does seem to have simmered down, and the Antlion project has already cut the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, and the Earth has cooled close to half a degree. The press wants a comment from Von Doom. They want him to admit he was wrong in his prediction of disaster. I've been overthrown, then welcomed back with a parade. My own robots rebelled. I dismantled them. You think I care for the opinions of invertebrate journalists? Speaking of journalists, we see that the task that Victorious was dispatched for earlier was in fact to kidnap and torture that annoying pretty boy talking head from before, Steve. Earlier, Von Doom had referred to the newshead as a picnic ant. Before heading out to meditate, Doom gives Petra a statement to give to the press. Just wait. It will all come crashing down soon enough. While meditating, Victor sees the family from before. He sees that Victor teaching his son how to fish, and the son mentions that the father saved the world. Back on the dark side of the moon, with a mighty Ka-oom! Antlion explodes, Still outside the castle, Victor sees missiles firing from the grounds of his castle into the sky. And the CO2 cleaning space station is also destroyed. 37 minutes later, Doom has learned that his silos activated without warning, and that a total of about 3,000 people were killed in the dual attacks on the space station and the moon. And on a TV screen, he sees that the control station on the moon was in fact attacked by terrorists waving the Latverian flag. Zora reports that the U.S. has authorized unilateral action and that NATO units in Central Europe have also been mobilized. And the Latverian defense system, that's offline. And the nearby city of Relaskic has been hit in retaliation. Doom says he needs to speak with them, to speak with any leader, so that he can offer full and unconditional surrender. Doom leaves Zora in charge as the nation's regent. You wanted to be the country's hero. Be it now. She promises to do that, but first, she's going to ask him a tough question. Is this your doing? Doom stalks off. How dare you, Zora? How dare you? 2 hours after the disaster, Doom is standing outside the castle on the ramparts, waiting. And Union Jack attacks him. Doom tells him to Brexit stage left. Okay, I laughed out loud at that. Only to find himself facing Agent Zero, who's there because Interpol's reward for Doom's capture just shot through the roof. After fully defeating both supposed heroes, he informs them that he wishes to surrender. And on the horizon, we see dozens of combat choppers approaching the castle. And once again, we see the other Victor, the human Victor with his wife, talking about how he's provided food for all, ocean wealth, planetary colonization. But back in Latveria, our Doom, the real Doom, has a realization. The world is not mine. To be continued. Well then. Quick cut to the chase for the overall reaction. I liked this. And now a slightly longer discussion and analysis. I did have three negative thoughts, things I didn't like all that much. First, it took me a little bit to piece together that there were two parts to this Antlion thing, a space station and the moon base. But scientifically, I see that that works. You need the actual CO2 cleansing to be taking place above the Earth, while the black hole is on the dark side of the moon. So it is two separate locations. They're in contact with each other. But it is important for there to be two places to be attacked so that we can have simultaneous attacks. That ramps up the nature of the attack, moves it into really a different terrorist category. But it took me a second flipping through to piece together exactly how that two-part system was supposed to be working. Now, the second one is sort of related, and it just might be me. It might be what I'm bringing to the story, perhaps what I'm reading into the story. But the dual factor of simultaneous attacks, attacks on multiple locations, and also the specific number of casualties, about 3,000. Both of those are, at least to me, 9/11 references. Those might not have been intentional, maybe they were. But either way, that combination gave me a, I see what you're doing here moment. And not necessarily in the good way. But third, and this is the biggest thing I can't figure out, how did terrorists get to the moon base to attack it? I understand the override of the missile silos in Latveria that knocked out the satellite, you know, space station. But the attack on the moon base, not sure how that was accomplished. I'm obviously missing something here. The attack came from within the base, that is mentioned. So are they saying it was an inside job? If so, that adds another layer to the 9/11 references, that of the conspiracy theorists, the truthers. But I don't know if that's what they're saying. Again, I sense I missed something there. But the rest of this, I totally dug. I like the questions that are asked, including the one I just touched on. How did this happen? This moon attack and this hacking of Latveria. I assume that the multiple mentions of the border nation of Sumcaria is a plot thread that will develop. Either they did it, or they're being used as a puppet by another darker force in the background to set them up for potential blame. So they may be the backstop for this framing of Latveria, that once that is revealed and discounted, blame will then turn to Sumcaria, while in fact perhaps another force is behind it all. That is a we-shall-see situation. Of course, not only does the attack put Latveria and Doom at risk of retaliation, on a personal level for Victor, the attack robbed him of the chance to be proven right. Because the system was blown up, the world will never know if Victor was right that the black hole was a bad idea, that it was doomed to destroy itself, that it was fatally flawed. Or should I say, the world will never know that he was right, because of course he was. But the attack, among all the other things it did, it also took away Victor's chance for vindication, for the world to know that he was correct. Do want to talk about those scenes of Victor seeing another life for himself? I'm reading these as daydreams or what he's seeing in his mind's eye, imaginations, that these are ideals of what he longs for. But of course, they could be literally alternate universes that he's looking into, alternate Earths, where he has seen that these events, those scenes, have played out or are playing out in that way. Now, if this were a slice of life comic or something like that, I'd be confident that these are simply, you know, his mind's eye, you know, inside his head, hopes and dreams. But in a comic book world, it could be an alternate timeline or another dimension that he's visited and witnessed. You can never quite tell. And I assume that all of this is related to Kang's mention of his recent bouts of depression, of melancholy. I don't want to give too much credit to the writer, but until proven otherwise, I'll assume that all of these plot threads and hints and mentions and throwaway lines, that they all have meaning and that they will all come back around. I certainly hope so. And let's give Dr. Doom credit for having two females as his highest ranking advisors. And it was nice to see that Boris's daughter is one of them, although we get the idea that Boris himself might not be long for this world, although Doom promised her that he will recover. I'm not saying Doom is the most progressive character in the Marvel U, but I will remind listeners that he is a member of an oppressed ethnic minority. This book did not use the G word, nor did it even refer to his people as Roma, the modern acceptable, politically correct term, if you will. But it is worth noting to those listeners of the SJW persuasion that Doom's story is the story of the lowest of the low. It's not just peasant becoming ruler, it is that, but it's more. It's the peasant of a people without a home, without a land. Wanderers, nomads, they use that word nomad, outcasts becoming a king. His people are a people that historically no nation has wanted within their borders. It's from that beginning that he rises, without help, without a handout or a hand up. Victor Von Doom is not of pure noble stock, from one of the important families of European aristocracy. Quite to the contrary. He is as far from that as one could be. And yet. But back to the big picture of this issue, just to summarize, just to bring us around. Bad things have happened in the world. Immediate signs all post to Latveria and Doom being the cause. And the world reacts. And Doom, surveying this chessboard, surrenders. Yes, he had to beat up Union Jack and Agent Zero along the way, but he did surrender. I'm curious to see how that works for him, how that goes, how he'll be treated once he is captured, how he'll respond to that treatment. I'm just not sure I'd want to be the person waterboarding Victor Von Doom. That's all I'm saying. do have to mention the art. I don't talk about art a lot in comics because I am a story-first person, and I do lack the knowledge and vocabulary to discuss art in a meaningful, knowledgeable way. But I do think that LaRocca's work here is very good. There are a number of scenes of Doom having conversations, and those are all presented well and in ways that set appropriate moods. And then we get the action scenes, the explosions, the fights. Those scenes really pop as well. So I think that Doom's costume design, the way that is portrayed, as well as Zora's, are also very good. Now, on this show, on these episodes, I don't think I'm going to give a rating to the book or a verdict on each issue as I might on another show, but I'll repeat the brief comment I made above. I like this. Now, there was almost no way I was going to not like this. I have to acknowledge that. But setting aside my bias, as appropriate and reasonable as a pro-Doom and pro-Latveria bias is, setting that aside, I still think this was good. And it certainly did what a first issue was supposed to do. It made me want to get to the second issue and see what happens next. That second issue of Doctor Doom is currently scheduled to be released on Wednesday, November 6th, and if all goes well, if that schedule is maintained, and if I'm able to get to the store that day or shortly thereafter, episode 2 of this podcast series could be out as early as 3 or 4 or 5 days after that. No promises, but that's the plan. That's the goal. That episode might be a bit shorter than this one. We won't have that opening segment, that origin story, although we will go over any feedback that you have on this episode. But still, I'd like to keep these episodes pretty direct and to the point. Speaking of feedback, if you have any on this episode or this issue or on anything related to The Good Doctor, feel free to contact me. You can do that via email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on the Facebook or blog post for this episode. That blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening. Take care. And...
Hail Doom! Hail Doom!